Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, mutants, marvels, monsters, morlocks, and chuds, this is the Set in Stone Podcast.
I must be slipping in my old age, the name amongst names.
Hey, you guys. That's right, we're back. Sorry about that delay. Had some pressing deadlines, had some conventions coming up, different shows, just staying busy. But I'm not going to let you down. I'm going to keep sticking through for this one. That's right. As long as I'm capable of doing this podcast, damn sure I'm going to keep doing it. We may even get Steven here to do a little bit of the intros, a little bit of the outros, a little bit of the editing, you know, kind of spread the workload a bit. Anyway, this issue of the Set in Stone podcast is kind of a really awesome kind of personal episode for me. It's with a very good friend of mine by the name of Gerald Johnson. And Gerald and I met kind of in a weird way. Well, we'll go over it in the interview. But it's kind of one of these weird coincidences that if not for this event happening, I don't know if I'd ever met this really cool guy, and kind of makes me sad. But I did meet him, and he's awesome, and extremely talented. So in case you miss it, you can hear it here. Go check out Gerald's art gallery showing down at the Arts Factory for First Friday. He's got his own little room over there set up. August 1st, 2014, in case that matters to you. You can just Google search First Friday, Las Vegas, and for the month of August, and you'll see it down there, and you'll be able to check it out. I think he's going to be up there showing his work for a while. So, yeah, go check it out. You know, give him some props, check out the work, and just see how awesome this stuff is. This guy's like a renaissance man. He's like all over the place. He's doing tons of stuff, which you'll hear in the interview. So I'm going to stop babbling here. I'm going to let you guys get to it, and you can check out this awesome interview with my buddy, Gerald Johnson.
I've never lost it. Even my heavy projects in college I had to do. Mm-hmm. I'm always very meticulous in budgeting the right amount of time during mm-hmm. the day or whatever, mm-hmm. so I don't have to sacrifice too much sleep. But I always end up finding myself working late anyways, because you just get caught up in it the moment.
Oh, me too. I call it getting in the groove.
Yeah.
Like my ex, you know, she'd be like, you know, hey, when do you want to go have dinner, or when you want to do this, you know, when you want to do that, or, and, like, oh, yeah, let me just finish working on this. Like, you know, like, 2 hours go by, and, you know, like, oh, damn it, you know what I mean?
Did you find that hurting your relationship? That you...
No, not really. I probably did less art then. I mean, whenever I did it, I would, you know, be in the groove, but, no, that wasn't really an issue in that case.
That's why I'm always trying to be very conscious that...
Oh, yeah, you have to. There's also another side of that where it's like, you know... Like, for me, she also understood that, like, you know, that's what I do. That's what I love. You know what I mean? That's who I am. If I'm not doing art, I'm not happy. You know what I mean? And there's a period where I didn't do art for, like, 6 months. And one day I'm like, I should grab a sketchbook again and, you know, do something on the way to work. I'm sitting there and I'm... Like, it's like learning to walk again. Like, my hand was just like, okay, I think that's how it's supposed to go. Yeah. I get the shape of the head down, and then I'm like, I literally forgot how to draw eyes.
Right.
I'm like, how do my eyes, like, when I draw them? And I just couldn't do it. And it killed me. I'm like, I can't believe it. Like, my mind was just like blank. So I did what I did in high school. I grabbed a bunch of comic books and threw them in my backpack, and I looked over them, and... went home and did some inking digitally over some other artists' pencil work, and Because in high school, that's how I did it. I got tracing paper and traced over other artists' artwork. Like, I'm going to learn how to do hands, so I just draw over a bunch of hands in the comic book. Just draw every hand, and then I like flip it over onto another piece of paper, and then use that side to put the graphite on another page, and then draw over that light sketch how I would draw a hand. You know what I mean? And then after a while, I would either... I never really looked at it and then redrew it, but I would like try to remember how a page looked, or a hand or a face looked, and then from memory try to redraw it, and then... Oh yeah, it's recording.
I already know what you said.
Yeah. I did get a little buffer in the beginning, you know. Then it would become my face, you know what I mean? It's reminiscent of that, but it's still my own. And I haven't done that since then. That's probably like 10 years ago.
I think I know the perfect thing that you need. It's independent from your computer, so you don't have to worry about your computer as processing powers. But it's perfect for you in the sense that you can do everything you want on the go, right? Mm-hmm. You can do your comics, or you can plot out your stories. Have you heard of the Cintiq Companion?
I have.
But there's two versions. There's an Android version and there's a Windows 8, but I think the Windows 8 version, even though it's expensive, I think it would be perfect for...
Yeah. That's like $2,000, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of pros doing
for
that.
For the higher end one, though.
Yeah.
There's the 256 and 512.
The one guy's an inker. He does that when he does a lot of conventions. But he's one of those guys that sometimes you see professional artists at comic book conventions, and they're like... And one guy's like, I do like 3 conventions a year. He's like, and I see some guys, they're at a convention every weekend. He's like, when do you guys get time to do page work, you know? And this one guy's like, I bring my companion with me. And he digitally inks pages that he can't get back to at home with a pen and brush. And he does it, you know? So I'm like, that's pretty cool. And I can't tell the difference between his digital work and his hand work.
All right, so I feel like I can talk art with you. To the sun goes down.
No.
Yeah. But, you can move on to. Did you get a chance to see the stuff I sent you?
I did. It was on my phone. I saw, like, the thumbnail previews. It looks good.
Yeah.
I like the scroll in color. From what I saw, my phone takes forever to load up, but I'll look at it closer when I get home, but yeah.
Yeah, so
that's cool.
There was a painting, a black and white painting, of a girl.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually my fiance.
Nice.
Yeah. There's some hand lettering stuff in there, and there's another kind of more creatively vivid, colorful painting of just...
That was the scroll one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
But the one of my fiance is just a teaser, and it's actually, there's actually more to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's more to it in the sense that, well, first of all, it's bigger than that preview, and also there's another kind of, it's not just a straight like painting. There's other stylistic things to it.
Like different techniques, like
There's another visual effect style and technique to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to show that. The only way to see that is if you go First Fridays and see it at the show. Yeah.
And where at First Fridays is it going to be?
So...
Arts Factory?
Yeah, so for anybody who's local, it's just Arts Factory.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's off Charleston and Main Street.
Yeah. So, in the Arts Factory, there's a... you know how there's many rooms in the Arts Factory?
Mm-hmm.
There's a gallery called R Space, and I'm in there.
Okay.
So,
another artist is going to be there, another local guy, but he's a pro. He did the comic book Razor back in the 90s, Everett Hartzell. Mm-hmm. He's also supposed to have some of his artwork shown in August as well.
Okay.
In one of the spaces. But, I guess he just made a comeback. He's making a comeback because he just did a Kickstarter last year.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, have you put any of your comics through Kickstarter before?
No, we all do it just self-publishing. Yeah, we just go through small printers. We just order like a base amount between 50, 25 and 75 copies.
Mm-hmm.
Just, save whatever that is and then just go and print it. Because if we were doing a Kickstarter, we'd feel like that gives us, leeway to be slower. You know what I mean? I mean, we're already pretty slow as it is.
But
this also has to do with having a partner on the other side of the country that has his own life and his own family out there and can't, know, can't wait to meet up because he's 4 hours ahead, you know, stuff like that. Well, you know, I mean, you have family on the other side of the world, so.
I can understand that. I kind of see, for your situation, the Kickstarter being offering some good incentives if you did it. First of all, this money, you won't have to worry about saving up the money to do the printing of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not complaining about the saving the money.
Yeah, it's not
a lot, but...
But even still...
But like, it's also like, if we didn't do it ourselves, and we just waited for a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo to do, like, a single issue, and say we didn't hit our goal, or we only got half of what we needed, I'm afraid that would make either one of us feel like, oh, we've failed, so nobody wants to buy it here online. Why? How would they go buy it in person? And I'm kind of glad the way we did it. What we are planning on doing is an Indiegogo for the trade, the collection. Just like the first 6 or 9 issues. And that's going to be all in color. And part of the Indiegogo will not only go to the paying for the printing, but it'll also go to, we want to commission a cover from a professional, you know, for the art. Scott McDaniel.
Yeah, I know that's your boy.
Yeah, oh my gosh, don't even get me started. But yeah, he's a guy that we love to support, and he supported us in the past, or at least me.
Have you ever talked to him about possibly doing a sketch variant cover of your book?
Oh yeah, we've talked to him. He's all down for it, but it's also a matter of, you know, paying for it.
How much would
or having the right thing for him to work on, that too. We wouldn't want him to just do a bunch of things that we don't know what we're gonna put it towards.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah, and there's bigger projects than that we're looking to work on with him.
How much would you have to pay him?
I think you get like a commission sketch is like $60 and like 2 characters is like $120. You know, relatively decent price for an artist who has that long a history in the industry. But like the covers are like, I think we're looking at like doing like a wraparound, and that's like between $300 and $600.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We're looking for doing like a page work, like have him do layouts, and then I work off of his layouts.
Mm-hmm. That'd be very beneficial for you too.
Oh yeah, I've seen his layouts, and they're amazing. Like they'd make anybody look like a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave us a page rate on that I don't want to speak aloud, you know, just in case, you know, somebody's like, hey, what about me, you know, or that's way more than I got charged, or way less, or, but, so we want to try to find the right project for him to work on for that, like him to do layouts, or even full pencils, and then I would do finishes or inks, you know, or both, which would be, you know, amazing, you know. But then we'd also have a project, if we'd want a project like that, we would want it to be colored, and we would be colored well, you know, so we'd want to get somebody who has some real talent to do that. So that, most of the money would be going to that. It would be going to pay for him doing the work, and then the colorist, and then the publisher. My brother and I would be just doing it for free, basically. Because that's what we're doing it now, you know. And it would be a pleasure to do that stuff.
The audience can enjoy some music in the background.
Well, I hope I'm not picking up too much of it. Go to iTunes. Shazam the music, buy it. There you go, there's your commercial. Let's jump in a little bit on you. Where did you... Let's kind of start from the beginning. Where are you from?
I'm from a military family. So I was actually born over in Seoul. So my dad's black and my mom's Korean. So I'm mixed. And
which is in itself is a amazing combination because
this is not
you got well no I mean because like and you have but you have what some people could consider though a really white name.
It's a really American
Gerald Johnson.
Yeah, it's a very Americanized name.
Yeah, that's probably even whiter than my name. I'm sorry, where did you say you were born?
Seoul,
that's right.
Yeah, hence one of, if you remember one of the arts I sent you, it's a hand lettering piece, but it says, I'm a Seoul man, but it kind of does a little creative wordplay on it, so.
Well, then they'll be able to see it if they go to the link.
Yeah, so I'm sure you'll talk or whatnot.
Yeah, so it's good to have a visual medium.
Yeah.
And an audio medium. So while we're waiting. So you were born in Seoul. When did you come to the States?
When I was real young, probably when I was around like 4.
Okay.
So really young.
So you grew up on a military base then?
Yeah, so I was, and it's very different. Wow, like now that I recall my childhood, even when I was, we were, most of our upbringing was in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
a military base near the capital of Pennsylvania, but that was such a different, like, lifestyle and culture, because it was very open.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, almost like,
Korea's very reserved, very...
Yeah, it's like, almost like all the families, they're, like, in our, just on one, the one area.
One street?
Yeah, the one street of it. So let's say there was maybe, like, 20 houses, and, it, like, all 20, it was a very open door. It was very, like, everybody knew each other's families, mm-hmm. and the children would play, and, like, all the children would play, all these, you know, red light, green light, all the different... like type of games that you probably played when you were younger. So
I think I've got a few years on you too.
Yeah. So
I don't know if you hit 30 yet, but
Yeah.
Oh, you have. Okay.
So I'm 33.
Oh, okay.
33 last week.
Oh, well, happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
So
again.
Oh, you were. Yeah. So
yeah, I'll be 35 in less than a month.
Oh yeah.
So, anyway,
there's actually an interesting age thing when. Reported by mm-hmm. by artists when it comes to guys getting their mid-30s, but I'll say that a little bit later. I might do some changes on the color scheme, but it kind of like the little kind of wordplay on the two souls.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm a soul man. Like, S-E-O-U-L, soul. Mm-hmm. So I was born there, and S-O-U-L because of, like soul, having soul. Well,
nice.
So, my pops had soul, and my mom was from soul, so... Well, I'm technically from Seoul too, but so it's kind of a little play on that.
That's cool. Yeah. I was talking to one of my dad's helmet when I did the library show. My dad works across the street, and the guy that drove me, he had to go pick his mom. I went to see him, and it just started growing in the facial hair. And a friend of his there, he recognized me. We were talking a little bit. My dad had to go do something because he was working. He goes, you do look a lot like your dad. Well, I'm like, I'm half him, so that's...
I get, like, the opposite, because people will say, you know, you don't look like your brothers, or, like, if they saw me and my dad standing next together, I'm sure they would say, you don't look like your dad.
Well, he's more soul, and you're more soul. He's more soul from the South, you're more soul from Korea.
Yeah. I was just thinking about something.
Mm-hmm.
We never... did an actual introduction.
I do that afterwards. You don't listen to the podcast.
No, but like people want to know my name.
I'll let them know.
Okay.
Well, we can do that too. This is Gerald Johnson.
Yeah. So, hi, I'm Gerald Johnson.
Yeah.
I'm a artist and web designer for
a major company. I never say where I work at because it's like. You know, you try to tell everybody, hey, listen to the podcast, and you just start talking shit about something, and it's like, oh, we don't want you to associate us with... Although if anybody goes to the, like, Facebook page, they'll find the link to my Facebook page, and they say, well, there's your work uniform. Let's zoom in. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But major company here in Los
Major,
Vegas.
Yeah. We both work for the major overall company.
Yeah.
Which is how we met.
Yeah.
Which is, what, 2 years ago now?
Yeah.
2 years ago, March? Yeah. The team building.
Yes, the team building company exercise they did. So
it sounds like a bunch of trust falls and kumbaya. And it was, but it was really awesome.
You know, they stopped doing that for. So now that's only done for higher ranking upper management people. Like it's not there for.
Well, it was in the beginning only for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and then they lowered it down. I guess it's because they'd done everybody and they wanted to keep those people working, but I guess that they maybe with cutbacks and have enough people to keep doing it, but and then they try to do that one big rally at where I work and then they're like, now everybody's a champ and we're like, oh, that's a bunch of bullcrap.
So now they've been
I felt bad because like one, we had to go through what 2-3 days of it, And then it's also like, man, they didn't get to go through 2 or 3 days of that. They just went to a rally.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of enjoyed mine. I got to know you guys.
Oh, my God. That's what I'm saying. It was so amazing. I wish everybody could have done it. You know, I went back to work, you know, that next day, and I was like, guys, this is amazing. And half everybody's like, yeah, we know. We did it, too. That's why we sent you. And like going to people I know in other departments, or don't even know in other departments, like, oh, my God, have you done this yet? And they're like, well, done what?
Yeah.
Like, ask your management now while you can, you know. Don't wait. Just volunteer.
Yeah.
But that was cool. That was a good time. I wish that was longer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they not condensed it. Or
originally, I heard it was like...
it's like a week.
Yeah.
5 days. Yeah.
So, then, I'm not sure if this is true, but then I'm hearing the... Now it's like to one day, but I'm not exactly sure.
I think it's still 2 days. That's a lot of information to go through.
Yeah, my director was kind of saying that it's down to one, but somebody said that they believe it's still 2 days, so I'm not exactly sure.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, I actually switched over to corporate, so she was working in the same building I was working. So it was good to kind of see her and stuff like that. And kind of touch up, catch up a little bit, but then she,
you almost said touch up.
Yeah, I don't know where.
Oh, I remember. I could remember that from. We had that. What was it? That's the last day we all did that big pump up at the. Was it? We came out and met all of our teammates and stuff.
Yeah.
She just out of nowhere. She gave me that big hug and wrapped her legs around my waist, and I was like, this is the greatest day of my life. We love Mai.
Yeah. If you're listening, we love you.
Yeah, you probably aren't. I love you differently. Gerald.
I like you as a friend.
Oh, because you're engaged. Call me.
I tell you.
Enough with hot chicks, we know. We should get back to talking to you.
Yeah. Are you saying I'm not a hot chick?
Not hot enough. Okay. So you were like, what, five? You said 5 or 6 and you came
Around
to the
4,
state.
But yeah.
Okay, so 4. And so was it Pennsylvania you grew up in then?
Yeah, most of my growing up was in PA. And then, probably like yourself, I was always... I was actually not good at anything.
Sounds about right.
I wasn't good at anything except for art. And I wasn't even good at art at the time.
Well, still not, but that's debatable.
So,
well, I meant me, not you.
Well, I'm still getting there too, but...
Welcome to self-deprecation hour.
Nah, we all have miles to walk.
Well, you would hope you would have a little bit of humble pie. You know, in your system.
Yeah.
You know, and be like, yeah, no, it's awesome. It's great. Look at that, isn't it?
Yeah.
But every once in a while, you get to a page or a piece of work, like, that's pretty badass. I did that with a cover just recently. I'm like, I think that's going to work. You know what I mean? It's like, I can dig it. So, drawing all the time?
Yeah, so...
And who started that? I mean, was that self-motivated or was that...
I think it was, because my earliest memories was just, like, in elementary school, just kind of enjoying art and the drawing classes that I had to take. But I didn't start taking it serious until, I'm not sure if your high school was like this, but in my high school, we can choose our classes.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we could only choose a certain amount. So, pretty much all your electives or your fun classes, you got to choose. So... I pretty much just stockpiled on all the drawing courses and stuff like that. And at the time, like, Photoshop was just coming out, so I was playing with Photoshop too. So, and I still wasn't good. But like I realized that I like it because you can tell when you love something because even if you suck, you still continue to go forward with it, right? And try to become better with it, right?
Yeah, to give you an idea, when I got into junior high school or middle school, they just come out with paint.
Yeah.
Like painter with a mouse.
Yeah.
Like when I was at elementary school, we were still using like Command Control D //. Yeah. That's how far back my computers, and like they were, maybe because I was little, but they were huge computers. But unfortunately, in my high school, like, you could take any electives you wanted, but some of them had to be required classes.
Yeah.
Like, I had to take typing, you know what I mean? So I'm working on a computer, but it's not what I wanted to do. Yeah. Turned around to like sophomore year, and they're like, the counselor's like, oh, look, you took computers in middle school or junior high school. You didn't need to take typing. Yeah. Like, I could have taken it in an art class. Yeah. But I muscled my way into painting one instead of taking art one. Because I was like, I've been doing it a long time. I should be able to handle this. You know, I came with a bunch of sketchbooks that I'd only done like 2 weeks before. Showed the art teacher. I was like, I'm really, really, really wanting to learn. And she's like, yeah, okay. And I did stuff that I didn't know if it was really what you should be doing with art, but it's just like what could be cool and different. So like I set up like bowls and flashlights and stuff on the kitchen table and then draw them without looking at the paper. You know, she's like, oh, that's like a blind line drawing or something. I was like, I didn't even know that was a thing. I just thought, all right, that's cool. Look, you can kind of see the flashlight and the bowl of fruit. And then did like a drawing of my dad or something sitting on a chair, and I didn't look at him, and I just did it all in one line. She's like, oh, that's a blind contour drawing. I was like, I don't know. I was, again, just doing something cool. Who knows? I was doing, you know, art three or four classes or something like that, or whatever the high level of art was. So needless to say, she said okay, and that was at the end of freshman year. And then sophomore year, got into art or painting, and basically by the end of high school, I was a president of the Art Honor Society, vice president of the art club, president of the comic book club. You know, doing football field paintings and all that type of stuff. Murals, so it's a big mural up in my high school that we all did over 2 or 3 months after school every day for like 2 or 3 hours that we did with a local artist that was also a student of my teacher. I want to say boss because she gave me my first job after high school. My last year of high school was her last year of school as well. She retired right after that. She owned an art gallery just down from the high school and also just down the street from my house. So she let me there work there with her for like 9 months and met a bunch of local guys, all like traditional painters. One guy did like football themed art. Yeah. You can probably find him online, Harold Bradford. Yeah. He's amazing. Like he did this a lot of masking art where like he would draw out a figure and then put a bunch of tape all over and then just do like just a yellow coat.
Yeah,
and then cover that and then do a darker yellow and then cover that and pull away part and then do like a hot pink and then a green or blue. And it looks like just a weird camouflage. And then you would do the background in kind of like selectively inverse colors or like the same colors, but in a pattern that was counter-complementary to the lines on the inside. And then you just pull all the tape away. And it would just be like, you know, some football player falling and catching a ball. And then, you know, like the colors look like dirt, but it looks like it was made out of confetti almost, you know.
Yeah.
And it was pretty awesome. He'd do it all in like oils. You know, and then once a week, Saturdays, they would all have like an artist get together. So, you know, Saturday mornings, we'd all go down and talk to the other artists. And, you know, a lot of them worked for like a local sign company. So they were just learning like Photoshop 3 and stuff like that. And they're like, I'd rather just do it all on a board with markers and pens. And I got to learn to use the computers. And, you know, yeah, once you do it, it makes it easier. But, you know, where's the art? So they loved going down there. I was like, well, it doesn't draw it for you. I'm like, oh, no, actually, you put a tree in there, and it's exactly the way you wanted to look. I was like, well, I guess it can then.
Yeah.
So that's the first I'd heard of, like CAD and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
They're using, like, CAD with Photoshop, which is, like, back in the early days. It was, like, 98 or... No, even earlier, 97, because we were doing that even in high school, once a week going down to the gallery. But, yeah, I haven't seen that place in, gosh, like... 8-9 years?
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring my books to show my art teacher.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to do the same. I wanted to go back to PA because I had some incredible... You know what? My art teachers in high school... See, the funny thing is, have you ever seen Boy Meets World?
Yeah. By the way, Gerald's still here in case my talking made you forget.
No, yeah, I'm still here. So, in Boy Meets World, like, when they had Mr. Feeny when they were little... And then when they went to high school, they still have Mr. Feeny because he ended up being the teacher in high school and in their college.
Yeah.
Right? I can totally relate to that because my art teacher was from my middle school or junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
You hit a table and it makes noise.
Then when I... then as I went to high school and so forth, then I had... The art teacher was still there.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I had no complaints because he was freaking amazing. Like... His oil techniques was by far the best that I've seen, like, of all the oil, people who paint oil, like, this guy was amazing, right? So I always wanted to go back to him and kind of, him and this other teacher I had.
Did you try looking him up online, Facebook, or?
No, I never tried. Maybe I should, but.
Yeah, I found my teacher, her gallery has a Facebook page, but like a lot of people at a certain age, they don't go there to look at it or follow. Like, I've messaged a couple times a year, being like, oh my gosh, you know, good to see you, and then, but yeah. I love to show her, like, you know, look, I did it. I published something, you know what I mean? Children's book and 5 mediocre comic books.
So I definitely want to reacquaint with them.
Yeah.
There's a weird type of acceptance, I think, that you feel when you can show the growth from, because they saw your artwork in the early days when you were growing up, and then
raw and my behind the ears.
Yeah.
And
then now you have a little bit more
piss and vinegar. Like, look at my work. Yeah.
So
I was like, I got, most times I got A's in a lot of the stuff I did because it was just like either, you know, I don't know if it was partly because it was simple or it was simple for me, or that my teacher was on her last year and he's like, whatever, I'll just give him an A because he tried. And then one year, I guess he, I don't know, either it wasn't up to snuff or everybody else's was so much better or she actually paid attention. But I got a B on a project. And it brought my overall GPA down to like a B plus. Like, everything else was like A's and then B plus. And I was like, how could this happen? Because that was the best grades I'd ever had. I was like a CD kid for a lot of years. You know, and then as high school, you know, went on, and then as I got more art electives added on, you know, they get more A's. Like, I like government and like geometry. It was like the only two required classes I needed.
Did you like geometry?
Oh, I loved it.
See, I have this interesting theory that people who even hate math, I have a theory that even, like, even for artists who may hate math, like geometry.
Oh, I do. Yeah. Well, oh yeah, I hated algebra. Algebra was.
Yeah, I didn't care for algebra either.
Yeah, I did, like, they like, you want to take pre-algebra or algebra? Because like, you took this certain type of math class in junior high school. And I was like, I don't know, let's just do pre-algebra, and if I'm good at it, maybe I'll jump to regular algebra. I'm so glad I did pre-algebra, because
that helped you understand. No,
it just sucked. It was so hard. I was just like, I can't do this. So then I took, like, geometry the next year, and it was so much easier. Yeah, algebra was just, it was so bad. And then, like, senior year, I didn't have to take a math class. So I think I only had, government and journalism, because I needed an English class. So, like, last 2 years of high school were all journalism. And, of course, for journalism, all I did was draw the comic strips and all the graphics, so that was a super easy A. Kind of like I was saying about the books, you just got to do it, you know what I mean? Don't overthink it. Just buckle down and...
Yeah.
Not even buckle down, just... Well, it always sounds weird when I was there, but just let it happen.
But, yeah. Everybody says that. I guess I'm more concerned with the quality. I'm more concerned...
I know we got that idea, but this is for your own original idea, your own graphic novel,
right?
Yeah.
So, the idea has to do with mages, because it's actually a video game idea, because I love, I was huge into, like, mages of different type of fantasy games and stuff like that, or action-adventure games or whatnot, so that's kind of the crux part of it, but it does, like, a twist on it, so, but I was more concerned, I wanted the story to be good, right, because it's representing parts of my culture, too, so I'm hoping it can be well-received, so I want the art to be good too, but I have more concern over the story. So I'm not sure if you find that similar. Like, if you're.
There's so much change in the story. I mean, like, my brother and I've been working on this idea since high school for Conquest, like 1998, 97, and. But first it was just me drawing characters that he had, and then it was like, oh, now let's turn it into a book. That took like another 7 or 8 years to do that, just to get it to look right. And then at one point we're like working on issue 2, like, okay, we know where who the characters are, we know where they came from, and we know what the end goal of the entire series is going to be. That's great. And I got to a point, and kind of going over the story in a timeline, and I'm like, why is the character doing this? Well, he wants to get to this point. And it's like, no, no, but why? You know what I mean? Like, what's his motivation? What's his overall goal? We know what happens to him, who he becomes, you know, who he marries, all that stuff, but why does he do this task to make this certain thing happen? Somebody was like, I don't know. I was like, well, we have a story, but no motivation, no MacGuffin, no what does the character want the most to make this whole reality spur? And then within a matter of like maybe an hour, I came up with an idea, and it changed the entire course of the book. It changed like everything. Like, and then at one point we're like, what if this character is connected to that character? What if this character does this? What character does that? Which is the great part about being independent and doing your own thing, because then you can change it in the midst of it. Like, all we had to do for the first issue, because we had it done, we just went in and changed some dialogue and the word bubbles, and one character became a completely different person, and a lesser character, when he was supposed to be, like, a key character, you know? And now we have such a much more vast story, you know? And we had an idea to kind of do this as a slow-paced thing, and then by the time we got to end of issue two, I told my brother, we need to speed it up, we need to have more action, we need to have the story really progress, because if you want to get to a certain point, it's going to be like issue 50,
yeah.
You know, it's going to be like it's going to be like Dragon Ball, you know what I mean? American version of Dragon Ball, where it takes forever for a fight scene to happen, it takes forever for people to talk, and they'll be walking down the street for forever, you know what I mean? So yeah, that part, you know, but that's also good when you have a partner, that somebody you can talk to about, you know, where the story's going and what you want to get across, because having a different point of view can kind of make you look at where your point of view is at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, say, like, you have an idea of, like, this should be going like this, but if somebody else comes in and says, well, if we just give it a twist, you know what I mean? Like, it may not be what you thought it would be, but it may be a better way to get to where you want to be in that point for whatever story you're telling.
It's always good to have a first perspective, because they won't have the attachment that you have
towards
the characters or to the storyline or plot.
Yeah.
So it's always good to have that outside perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Having a fresh set of eyes on anything can be really good, which is why I picked up that other project, the Chain Reaction book with my friend Josh. It was just one. It was not like Conquest, which is like sci-fi high adventure, you know, which is fine. I like drawing the characters, but I'm not very good at sci-fi. I love the genre, and I love watching the movies and all that. But like drawing spaceships and stuff like that, and like really complicated aliens, not really my forte. You know what I mean? Not really great at it.
Let me ask you.
I gotta do it. Oh yeah.
So, if there was a sci-fi genre of certain something that is not normally known to be sci-fi, so that was part of the twist, would you do it? For example, if there was a fairy tale story, right? Because you know how fairy tales are popular now. But if there was a fairy tale story, but it was done in a sci-fi way, would you be eager to check it out because of the sci-fi element? Or
well, for me, when it comes to almost any story, and it's maybe just because I'm an artist, but I always look at the way it looks first.
Yeah.
You know, I like some stories, like I don't give a damn about certain characters, but if he gets somebody like Joe Madrier drawing it, I'm going to be all over it, because that guy can make anything look amazing.
Yeah.
Or if Jim Lee's drawing a book, like, I never would have picked up a book called Divine Right about a kid who's a hacker.
I remember that book.
You know, and his best friend,
Max
Faraday, his best friend is hitting on his sister, and his sister's in the military. That doesn't, and he goes to another world. That kind of doesn't sound very cool at all, just based on that.
Yeah.
But if you got Jim Lee writing and drawing it, I'm gonna go pick it up. You know,
like,
and it was not a heavy action book until towards the end, but it was Jim Lee, and it looks great, so that's why I'm gonna pick it up. You know?
I like Jim Lee's homage to Max Faraday, using the Max Faraday character. Do you know anything about Max Faraday?
Oh, yeah,
He's actually, he's an actual historical figure, Max Faraday.
The name, no, I don't know who.
So Max Faraday was a scientist who pretty much discovered how to conduct. So you know how, like, your house right now and how electricity is measured and stuff like that, meter, like, That process was done by Max Faraday. He figured it out. So all your electrical devices, your fans and stuff like that, would that be possible for if Max Faraday didn't?
Okay.
That method, right?
Oh, cool.
So,
cool.
So.
I just thought it was a cool name.
Yeah. and plus, you can tell he was thinking that because what power did Max Faraday have?
God power, from what I understand.
Well, like, every time I saw him, he was doing some electricity. Electric kind of. Like, he was shooting, like, either electricity or some kind of lightning or something like that, yeah. So, I can tell he was homaging Max Faraday.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, but, it, yeah, so, I I mean, in depending on the story, like I say, no, so when I did Chain Reaction, it was nice because it was a completely different change from what I've been doing since 1999. You know, drawing these same characters over and over again. You know, our book has like 13 characters, and they're all different, and all, you know, aliens and different suits, and, you know, nobody looks the same except for the soldiers, and they do look the same, but they all have complicated costumes, and it's just a, you know, I got so many different names to remember. It's not like, you know, there's a ton of Marvel characters, but I know them, and I listened to them growing up, and they're identifiable, but it's also like, when it's your own characters, you know, they're all different, it's tough, but this book, Chain Reaction, I did with this guy, Josh, who found me through Facebook and DeviantArt, he had like a traditional superhero book, which is two characters, you know what I mean, and, or three, like one of them was Nikola Tesla, you know what I mean, he showed up for a little cameo in the middle, and it was just fun to draw spandex and explosions and time travel, and so that kind of rejuvenated my art energies, and then I think we produced two more books, and then we hit a lull after issue four, which was almost a year ago, and gosh, what was it, 4 months ago, I think, or maybe a little longer, I started working on layouts for the next Chain Reaction book. Like, the writer and I were just texting ideas back and forth, and I'd do stuff in my sketchbook and send him a photo, and he's like, what do you think of that? And he's like, that's cool, what's that for? I'm like, I don't know, maybe a follow-up. And he's like, yeah, okay, let's do it. So then we had so much of a story that we broke it into two parts.
Yeah.
Like, we went over the origin and then the future. Well, we started with the future, and I said, well, how did they get to that point? We did the background, and I said, let's do the background first, and then we'll do the follow-up. So we got Chain Reaction Genesis, and then Chain Reaction the main story, which is the first part, and then Omega is going to be the last part, and that's going to be like crazy outer space stuff. So, and that's been cool, and I've been able to help develop the story. So on that side, almost from the ground up, you know, because there were points in the original story where I'm like, hey, you should probably change this up, mix this up, you know. You know, did some research on Tesla, like in the book, you probably buy it online, but the characters travel into Tesla's lab in Pennsylvania, and he wanted one of the characters to be getting up off the ground and Tesla to give him a hand to lift him up. And I looked up Tesla just to find some interesting facts about him, and I was like, he's a germaphobe. He didn't like to touch people.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, he wouldn't help him up. He wouldn't offer him a helping hand. You know, it's kind of a cool character moment, but it's not Tesla.
Yeah.
You know, and then a few years later, he cut to that movie, The Prestige, came out.
Okay.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Hugh Jackman went to meet him, and he's in that lightning, and he walks up, and he's like, David Bowie's like, I'm Nikola Tesla. And then Hugh Jackman sticks his hand out to shake his hand, and Tesla just has his hands behind his back, and he looks at his hand, and he's like, all right, then. And I'm like, nailed it, you know? So that was pretty cool. But yeah, just again, just a different perspective on things can just, you know, get things going. So we keep jumping off track. So you did art in school like everybody else, right? So you just start picking up, like you said, high school more electives were just more art classes.
I took it more seriously in high school.
Yeah, me too. I was gonna go to a story again, but it's still much of me talking. Well, I'd say the hardest part was learning how to do a comic book in the first place. Like, you know, we'll start the comic book club up again and do comic books.
I did that in college.
It's like, how do you draw a page out? Yeah. Like, I have 100 comic books at home. Yeah. I don't know where to start. I did a story without even writing a script, and, oh.
Yeah, in college, I had this awesome professor who worked for Marvel and DC. And
what's his name?
Dave Hoover. He did a Captain America.
I know him. He did what's his name? U.S. Jack? He had, like, a red mask with a red, white, and blue hair and a boombox that... It's around the time Captain America died, he had the armor on.
Yeah.
No, I know him or his artwork.
Yeah. So he was my professor for storyboarding and some other art classes.
Oh, nice.
So we kind of were talking around, and we kind of petitioned around to see if there was demand and interest for a comic book club, and there was. So with that said, we pretty much started up a comic book club.
Oh,
so
cool.
It was awesome.
So you could do any books, or is it just like getting together talking about comic books?
It was kind of, we didn't do any books, but it was kind of more so of like, he'd do like the sessions where he'd teach like inking or whatever, and all stuff like that. So it was kind of more instructional, but like a lot of the times it was just kind of a powwow and people getting together about art. So.
We up until recently, we were doing that with our local group, just kind of sitting around. But most of us were also working on stuff for books, like, or we'd show layouts to each other and stuff like that. But it's mostly just like a knitting circle for artists, just sitting around, talking about whatever.
Yeah.
And we did it in a comic shop, which was great, so we grabbed the new books off the shelf and talked about those and whatnot. So. That's cool, man. Yeah, I remember Dave Hoover. That was back in mid-90s, I think he was doing that. Was he doing that at the same time as teaching? I know when you went to college. Was it 94?
He was doing some comic book work, not for Marvel or DC, but he was doing some work.
Mm-hmm.
He even did a Top Cow submission, but he didn't. They didn't really look at it.
Yeah, he's got a very different style compared to what they normally do.
Yeah. So, but yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I never had that type of experience.
Yeah.
Well, no, not true. It kind of did. Well, that's another story, maybe for another time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if I already told it or not. But I told you it's Scott Clark. Yeah, Scott Clark. If you remember back in the 90s, Image had all those books come out. Stormwatch.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy who drew Stormwatch, Scott Clark. He also did like Alpha Flight when they brought that back.
Okay.
Where they had like that slick red and white armor.
Yeah.
And Sasquatch looks like a giant, you know, saber-toothed beast. And, it's like all noir looking.
Yeah.
Well, he used to live in town here in Vegas, and he used to come to the meetings whenever we were in town, and I saw him at one of the conventions and. He used to hang out with us and just draw and tell us stories. But yeah, it's crazy. But he actually he like came into my house a couple times and like he was getting rid of a lot of comps from his years of working at DC just recently. Like he did like Grifter and I Vampire and a couple other books. And they would just send him free stuff all the time. So he's selling off a lot of big trade books.
Is a book called I Vampire?
Yeah, it's a book called I Vampire.
Okay.
It's gone now,
yeah.
So I'm pretty sure they still own the copyright, but do you have an idea for an eye vampire?
It could be an interesting take.
Yeah, that title.
Yeah, that title.
Sorry, I'm sure you'll come up with something much more creative. It sounds like iPod to me.
Yeah.
But like, he was hanging out with us, and like, we went to dinner with his son and him and a couple other local artists just hanging out. Unfortunately, I think it was February before last, he passed away, but it's kind of bittersweet, because like, I got to know this really great guy. He sold me a piece of original Stormwatch artwork for almost nothing. Like, he could have gotten so much more if he had not put it in a stack of old artwork that he was just practically giving away. It's like $1, $2, I don't care, just make me, 10 pages for $1, it's like really old indie stuff, like stuff we would do. And then right in the middle of, like, he got this giant stack and he split it in half. And the one guy is like, hey, which half do you want? It's like, I don't care. And he handed me the bottom half, and I found an original Stormwatch page. And I got it for a song, basically.
Yeah.
It's super cheap. And, and through that and all the others, we became friends. And he was like, said he was going to start bringing over his artboard and his pages so I could scan them and email them to DC for him. And then he's like, yeah, I'll bring over my artboard and we'll go over your layouts. You know, so he'd tell me with issue 4's first couple of pages. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, I can't wait for this stuff to start happening. You know, and then he passes away. And it's just like, you know, like you working with this really great artist. But yeah, I'm more upset that he's just not. I'd almost rather him not be hanging around with me than to be gone.
Yeah.
It's just how it goes sometimes. And then obviously we all got to know him a little better. You know, I mean, he's a funny guy. You know, we hung out from like gosh, what was it, like 3 o'clock in the afternoon one day for an event till 3 the next morning, just talking about him and the old Stormwatch days and parties with Jim Lee and all the other guys, and him and like Ryan Benjamin and learning how to do stuff the right way, and how even Jim Lee back then in his, you know, mid-20s was just schooling these 17-year-old kids on how to be better artists. It's like he knew how to do it so well that it was ridiculous. Like, it made people just look bad, you know.
Not to be a bearer of bummer news, but Hoover also passed away.
Oh, yeah, really?
He was
that's right. I saw that on DeviantArt, it was. Yeah, that sucked. Him and, what was it, Al Rio, right? Yeah. Al Rio passed away. I don't even know him.
I know. The Camp Out clone.
Hey, if you got a niche, take it. But he was doing like a lot of pinup art, a lot of that. But I understand he kind of went out like really sadly, like he suicide, I think it was. Like he hung himself. His studio. Yeah, I remember because he was doing like Jungle Woman stuff, right? Like I remember he's like some Hoover. He's doing like a lot of really high rendered cross hatching.
Like, I didn't know his parents too well, but they really gave some. There was the artistic gene pool in that family was freaking crazy because he had the twin. His brother worked for Disney, if I'm correct. So he was showing me his brother's like Disney paintings and stuff like that. Freaking ridiculous.
Is he like a background painter or like a?
Yeah, I think so. Like, he did some scenes, and I think he did some character. I'm not sure what he exactly worked on, but I just saw his art, and, like, both of them were...
Because I know there's some that do, like for movies, they'll do, this is a scene of a fight to give you the feel of how it could look.
Yeah, so...
I don't know the technical... I can't remember the technical term for it.
Both guys were... Like, Hoover had a classic style, too, but his drawing ability was really, really good.
Yeah. I said I wasn't going to go through that story, and I did it anyway.
I'm sorry.
No, it's me. I was like, no, I have to get the story out, because I don't know if I told it before or not.
Yeah.
But,
We should just move on.
It's get depressing, and then you start talking about other artists who have passed away.
I started taking art seriously in high school.
Then you need comics in college with Hoover.
And then, so, I went back, I was in college in Philly, then I went back, after I graduated, I went back home to Central PA, mostly because, to support my mom, because at that time I heard my mom had a tumor on her spine, so I kind of wanted to help the family, so I took, like, 6 months, like, off or whatnot, and then after that time period, I found a job where I started at a local kind of coffee shop nearby, in website and marketing and website development. So I was there for about 5.5 years, and then after that time, some friends and I decided to come here for vacation just to check it out. But we liked it, so I decided to. Completely random, decided to make a journey out west. So
that sounds like both sides of the spectrum. Either completely out of the blue, or it's like I hear people do well out here. And they just uproot their whole families and come out.
Yeah.
So your family's still back in PA.
Okay.
And your mom's doing better, I hope. Or
she's doing better. She's good.
Or not. I don't know. Is this gonna be another death conversation?
She's good.
Oh, that's good.
That's good. But my father passed away, so
that sucks.
He had some health issues, but
yeah. So I'm glad we had burgers. So you took art again in college?
Yeah.
Was that out here or was that out there in Pennsylvania?
It was out in Philly.
In Philly, okay. Yeah. And was that part of a career goal, or was that just part of like, I have to go to college so I may as well have something fun to do, or?
At the time I didn't know any better. And so I went to college just because it was the default thing to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, there were repercussions of that with the debt and all, but...
That, and the fact that I didn't have the money to go to college is why I didn't go to college.
Yeah.
I was, like crippling debt. Like, my friend did mechanics, like, to a mechanic school, and he's a runner for a law office now.
Yeah.
He spent thousands of his parents' money, and just like... That's great, you know.
You're not missing much. I'm glad with the friendships I made in college.
The experiences that more than even the schooling is a good reason. But
and it's not like my school. I can count the amazing teachers I had on one hand, right?
Yeah.
Other than that, the friendships and kind of the experiences I've had,
are
good. But now. Nowadays, I would recommend people. There's so much stuff online, resources online or whatnot. There's like almost anything that you want to know, you can find it for either free or you pay. But it's such a cheap price compared to education.
Compared to higher learning, it's a fraction of the cost. Yeah.
So.
And even that, I mean, there's also like trade schools and community colleges that you can only take. You only have to take a smaller amount of courses.
Yeah.
As opposed to the big overall of going to like a university where it's like, you have to take 9 classes to get 1 credit and the one thing you want to do to get some type of BA or something like that, or a certificate, you know.
And I technically don't need a good degree for what I'm in. Like, I could have been working as a web designer for the company we work for without without my degree. So
I'm sure it'd help, but... I mean, it doesn't look bad. It doesn't look bad when you have, like, James Stone, admin, Kmart, retail, web designer.
Yeah.
I mean, then you have, high school education, college education, and some type of art.
Yeah.
You know, Gerald.
Yeah.
I'm going to hire you before I'm going to hire that guy.
Yeah.
I don't care how many comic books you own. It doesn't make you a good web designer. It's like I tried to put out an application for something, and I'm like... Like, how do I put down I'm self-taught in Photoshop, and it's an old version that I don't know everything I'm supposed to know about it, or a program from Japan that not everybody uses, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe like, what about Illustrator? I'm like, I don't use Illustrator.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's the best for making graphics. I'm like, well, I get by, you know what I mean? I know some tricks, you know?
Who said it was the best for making graphics?
My brother does that. He does, like, the logos and stuff for our books.
It's best for... Especially stationary things that need to be constantly resized.
Yeah.
But in terms of making graphics, Photoshop. But
Well, I mean, other people say painter.
That's if they're doing painting.
Yeah. Again, it's all artistic preference.
Yeah.
Because there's some people just like, why don't you just grab a paintbrush and an airbrush and do it on canvas like a real artist.
Save
air
money.
Quotes, real artist.
So I mean, I got into digital art because...
It's cheaper.
Yeah, like so much cheaper.
Oh, me too. That's why I was able to get my first book done.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say quickly, but and I've gone reverse. I've started digitally, and now I'm slowly going back to paper and pen and ink and brush. And
I still do that. Like, so for my work, I always start traditionally because I always I love that feel. And And I always find myself. I don't know. I find myself being able to explore better. My thoughts better if I have some sort of, I don't care if it's a napkin or whatever.
Yeah.
I just explore better if I have that pencil in my hand and doing that.
Yeah. When I do it, I do layouts with my brother. We jump on Skype and we'll lay out a page.
Yeah.
And I get an idea where he wants to go with it. And then sometimes the whole thing will have to change just because this looks good on that small screen. Compared to when you put it on the full page, doesn't mean it works out the same way or your storytelling is correct, and then you have to rework a whole page and cut pages together, and but that's also the fun side of reworking a layout, and then have somebody to send it to and be like, hey, what about this, what about that, is this a better idea? But I'm just slowly going back to wanting to do everything on paper, when I was a kid, it's just, I don't know, it just feels better, Like, I still ink in, the Conquest book digitally.
Yeah.
I'm not, just because of the effects and, I want to be able to get, spaceships to look symmetrical, so I use a symmetry tool and all that. I'm not at that point yet by hand doing that. And if I, even if I was, I would leave everything but a spaceship drone. That way I could just pop it in there digitally, you know, in the middle of the page and be like, yeah now let's hope it doesn't look too bad compared to the rest of it.
Where to
now? So so now you're so from there you came here, then it's basically web design from here after.
Yeah, I had some trials and tribulations when I first got here. So for pretty much the first year, I kind of got involved with this print local mom and pop print shop.
Mm-hmm. If they're bad, you can say their name. We'll back.
So BR Signs. It was just like the owner was a car salesman, right? So and not
used, a used car salesman.
not to stereotype all car salesmen or whatever, but he kind of had. Slithering kind of talking.
He's a stereotypical car salesman.
He
lives up to the stereotype.
Yeah, so, and just, I won't go too deep into it, but I am thankful because I was there for 6 months,
mm-hmm.
and then so it did help me out. I did get to see some inner workings of a print and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But from there, I went on to this another local print area. So I won't mention their name because they're pretty good.
Yeah.
But I just it was so like demanding,
mm-hmm.
and it was just wasn't my cup of tea.
Yeah.
So then from there, I went to a real estate, I think it's the number one real estate company in Las Vegas, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But the vice president of that company, he had like a few other businesses that he had in Las Vegas, and he wanted me to develop the web marketing for these companies.
Yeah.
So for three of his companies, I kind of built like websites and stuff like that. And he was
cool.
A good boss.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
Well, he's giving you work besides the real estate, right?
So. Yeah, he was giving me so web work that I was doing.
Like, wait till you get the bill.
So
that must have been in the earlier days before just anybody was doing web, like Wix or any of the.
I think Wix was around.
But I mean, it wasn't like as readily available as it is now, where it's like just anybody can build a website, you know.
Yeah, but okay.
Well, it's a more of a. I should ask more of like how long have you been in town compared to.
Here's the thing I'll say about those.
Because it was only like 3 years ago, then it's like, well, no, and then that website would have been around, you know.
Yeah. So here's.
But not everybody knows how to do that, or.
So here's the thing I'll say about Wix and all those companies that do ready-made websites.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for giving power to the people to be able to make their own websites and stuff like that too.
Yeah.
But I still think professional web designers are very crucial and necessary for this. Because, for example, I know a lot of people, since they have smartphones and stuff like that, they feel like photographers because they can take pictures.
Yeah.
But that still can't replace a professional photographer doing some amazing wedding photos of your wedding or whatnot.
Yeah.
They still have those skills, they were either self-taught or got through specialized education to get those credentials or those skills, so they know what they're doing. So those ready-made websites, they'll give you a website and stuff like that, but a web designer, a professional web designer will give you much more than that. He'll give you, or she, or a company will give you a well-crafted web design fit to the latest standards.
Yeah.
Web, because web technology is constantly changing and improving, right? So they will just give you a well-crafted, real awesome website for your needs, right?
You hear that?
Yeah. So, and I'm not just
preach
saying
it.
That,
preach
I'm
it.
I'm not just saying that because I'm a web designer. I'm saying it.
Oh, my brother appreciates that. My older brother, he's a web designer too.
Yeah.
Like a part-time web designer, but
yeah.
I equate it to like just because you can do one of those, what do they call it, bit strip comic strips, like you see everybody has those simple form figures and like a little tagline or whatever, just because you can do that doesn't make you a comic artist.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like and then you see some people that are like professionals or artists in their own right doing it,
And it's just like, I'd rather see you draw that strip. You know what I mean? You could give it so much more energy. And those look alike. It's, you know, you get your own voice into it. And then that also was like, you know why my strips look better than yours is because, you know, I know what I'm doing and I've done it a long time. And through practice and education, that's how you get it to look great.
Yeah.
You know, just like what you're saying about web design.
Yeah. So even if there's pre-made like books and stuff like that, a lot of stuff they offer you, and the reason why they can offer you that cheap, because everything is template. So,
yeah.
Like, so basically what that means is that your site is going to look like everybody else's, right?
Yeah.
Or variation.
Yeah, depending on combination,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it's just people, it's like anything, stereotypical America, that people are lazy and they want a website and, and they just want to have something up, you know. It's like, I want to show my cat photos. There's, you know, my stupid cat website, you know what I mean? It's like, if you want to do that, just go to Tumblr.
Yeah, or
get a Tumblr page.
Or stuff like that. Because those provide, like, the quickest and easiest option, right? And those are free, too.
Yeah.
So,
But I'd rather see that than somebody put together a poorly done website, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what, by comparison, you know, I've seen some that are pretty cool, but I mean, I don't know how ours stands up. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but
Immortal Samurai. That's just all your
I know it's pretty simple, but it's also I think the mobile version is probably worse than some of the other ones I've seen.
No, I didn't check to see if it was responsive, so I need to
I mean, some, like, trying to click on just icons to get to places, but I think it's also because my brother didn't learn that for mobile, or the way the website is set up wasn't for both mobile and desktop.
Yeah.
I don't think mobile versions were available back when we started it. You know what I mean? Like, years ago, we got the URL probably back in, like, 99.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think smartphones were available back then. Like, I think smartphones only came around, what, 2002 or 2004 or something like that? Yeah, so.
So my first
that's what we'll have to look into.
My first impression of your site when I went to it is it was clean. It had a very clean look to it.
Yeah.
It also gave me a very, like, almost WordPress feel.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of had that template feel to it. So I didn't check to see if it was responsive, but if it's not responsive, it should be. So you should tell
it. It's better than a lot of sites I've gone to.
Yeah.
Like some that you would expect to be online.
Yeah.
Like, I like the site and I like what they show, but, like, there's ones like, they'll give you, like, previews of, like, they'll give you, like, these launch viewers. Like, it's like, here's top 10, you know, worst Batman comic books. And there's, like, launch viewer. And then, for whatever reason, it just blocks out the entire image and the cap, or half the caption. Then you've got, like, the ad spaces tend to fill up the whole screen. You know what I mean? Which, that's one, you know, an example of, I mean, ours isn't too bad. So when can we expect this book, this graphic novel to come out, man?
I mean... So,
I know you're all full of self-doubt, like any artist,
but see,
I'd love to be able to help you get this thing going. I mean, not like I don't have enough on my plate as it is, even to get it under the label, because, like, what we do is, like, we'll put stuff under our label, and then, like, you know, you would just, you know, cover whatever type of printing you want to have, and then whatever you sell the book for is yours to keep, you know what I mean? Say, like, you get, like a run of 100 books, and it costs you, like, $200 or whatever it may cost. You know, you sell them for... you know, $5 a piece, that's like $1,000 or whatever, that's all yours. You know what I mean? We're not the type of people like, hey, we want to take 10% off the top or 20%. That's not what we're really about, you know. If anything, we would like to do that, you know, for ourselves, but even though we are not making money, but we're also looking to just get people involved in it, so, you know what I mean?
I hear you. So, you remember, like, earlier when we were inside, right now we're kind of outside this building, but earlier, James and I were inside, and
it was nice and cool.
Yeah, it was nice and cool.
And our boba were
full.
We're
in Las Vegas heat, but it's kind of a little bit better now.
Yeah, it's 8 o'clock and probably 102 degrees.
Yeah, compared to it being 104 earlier. But when we were inside, I was telling James I was envious of him, right? And I was envious because...
And I told him he was crazy.
So I told him reasons why I was envious. But also, the other reason why I was envious of you is we're both artists and we're both passionate about art. But another thing I like about you is your artistic identity is very strong. Like, you, like, love comics and that's, like, what you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and stuff like that. So, but for me, I found that I'm a very different type of artist. Like, I love comics, but I'm almost, like, an art whore. Like, I like I love so much different kinds of art that I always feel like...
You mean production-wise? Like, you, like, produce so many different types of art?
Yeah, or, so...
Okay, so, because I love all types of art, too.
Yeah.
But my forte and my skill set is in comic books.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't shun away and be like, that Rembrandt's an asshole,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, screw Da Vinci, him and his non-flying helicopter. But no, I mean I love all that stuff, but it's just my passions lie there.
Yeah.
You're more on the fine arts side.
Well, see, I can't even say more. I can't even say more so on this.
Oh, it's 103, so we were wrong. I mean, it's 115 earlier.
So, anyways, no.
Yeah.
I love like comics and all that, and part of why I'm in web design is because I love that too, and I consider that art too. So, but what I mean by me being an art whore is because I like the storytelling, comics, and stuff like that, and I like doing that, and I like doing, and I do these art shows, which I kind of told you about, too, so I do my paintings or whatever, and lately I've started getting into custom hand lettering, because everything's digital now,
yeah.
So I kind of like the
taking a step back.
Yeah, I kind of like the friendly charm that, like, custom hand lettering has, right? So... I just like doing all these other different types, and in addition to that is I love all these different type of styles, which is why my paintings or whatever, like the scroll painting, had a different visual style than the grayscale paintings I did of my fiance. So I just have to try it. So basically what I'm getting to is in relation to my story is I have this plan of building out the Gerald Johnson brand, right? Because I want the Gerald Johnson brand to be a brand of quality. So I'll continue to strive for that and create, like, these paintings and do these shows. I've been trying to do these shows once a year, but I have two shows next year, too. So,
that's
so
cool.
Yeah, so I'll get into that later. But, so I'm doing all these other different type of artworks with that. And so I feel like after that, then maybe I will transition into the story and work more on fine-tuning the story arcs. And I kind of even want to redo some, scrap some characters, because I feel like some characters won't necessarily push the story forward, and I have to think about the story for...
Well, I wouldn't recommend scrapping it, but I wouldn't recommend putting it away somewhere else. Because I did the same... I did, like, at one point when I was doing Conquest... and I was working on... Like, we had a lull between... Or maybe it was before, like... I can't remember, like I was trying to develop the book, so yeah, I was doing the early editions, and then, like, my brother was just not calling me because it was expensive, and I just started developing a story on my own of one of the characters' backgrounds, and then I grabbed a sketchbook, like a small sketchbook, and I would do, like, a head sketch and a body sketch, a head sketch and a body sketch, and I did, like, two or three notebooks like that, just full of characters like that, and thinking, like, I'll just pick and choose some of these characters and put them in there. At first it started out as, like, a sketchbook of that comic. Like, all the characters, the height profiles, the spaceships, the aliens, blah, blah, blah. And then we started rolling on Conquest, and I was like, well, we're going to need characters. I just started just drawing tons of characters.
Yeah.
And I was like, who are these characters? What do they do? I'm like, I don't know. That's up for you. You're the writer. And now we can go through the website or our own personal, like, Dropbox, and then say, like, okay, we got this guy. We'll make him the mayor of this town.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, that guy may not work for that story, but you can always take off the name and put him in... Or keep the name or whatever, and then just put them into another store. You know, change up a costume or something.
Yeah.
So it's never a good idea to throw everything away completely.
So,
but just transfer it somewhere else. You know what I mean?
Right. So when I said scrap, I just meant that I have that character in the vault. But I'm gonna
okay.
Get real.
Edit that out.
Okay. So I'm about to get real with you, right?
Okay.
My old mentality was to draw characters and somehow fit it into the story, right?
Yeah.
So pretty cool, but. Lately, over the years, from me originally starting it to now, I've noticed the shows, the comics, everything that has a story element to it, I've noticed, once I discovered the process, I've noticed I tend to like stories that almost do the opposite way. Like, they'll have a story, and they'll create the characters that purpose that... They'll create the characters... that fulfill the purpose of that plot or whatever.
Mm.
So, and I, like, that method, like, one of my favorite series, animated series of all, well, in terms of anime, is Full Metal Alchemist. In terms of actual American-made stuff, is Avatar The Last Airbender, and so on and so on and so forth. And those, the characters are so awesome. The stories are so incredible. They have an awesome rewatchable value. Like, I rewatched this series so many times, it's not even funny.
Yeah. That's one of those I have to get into.
Yeah.
I spend so much time watching Mystery Science Theater. Yeah. I've become numb to it almost to a certain point. I roll that while I sleep.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So
that you say that's where you're looking to go, or are you looking to maybe twist that around? Like, do things that, like, characters are set up for what you would expect to be a situation, and then they would twist it, like Watchmen? Like, you got a Batman character, you got a character who's like the Question, like a detective, you got a Superman type of character, like Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know, or like Rorschach and Owlman, and you know, like a Wonder Woman, Silk Spectre. And then they're thrust in a situation of, like, somebody's trying to take over the world, and then they actually get away with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then my character is just like, yeah, no, I'm a Captain America Lex Luthor type, you know, Ozymandias. And it's just like, no, I'm much smarter than your regular comic book character, and I've killed millions of people, you know, 20 minutes before you even showed up, you know, and then they have to deal with that, you know. I mean, for me, that's the type of story that I like, you know, where it's like, you take traditional types and then you destroy them.
And
you twist them around, yeah.
So in your method, you take those, like...
Alan Moore took Batman, who's the most awesome guy ever, most badass, and he turned him into, like, an impotent coward.
Yeah.
Which is what Owlman was, you know? Like, he didn't want to fight anymore because he was afraid of the law, and he couldn't get it up when he was, you know, having sex with the most gorgeous female on the planet. You know, and it wasn't until, like, you know, he faced death and, you know, the violence of his past that he's able to, you know, get it on, basically.
Yeah. So, my original thinking was I created, like, in my main story, I created these black mages, these white mages, so on and so forth. And then I created those characters, I designed those characters, then I was going to fit them into the story, right?
Yeah.
So, that was my thinking before. But now what I want to do is some of these characters will still maintain, still be there because they will still fit for what I want to say. But now I want to really look into creating an amazing story arc, right?
Yeah.
And so then I'll fit those characters into it. Like I have this main character, and then I'll design a situation, and that situation I'll base these other characters out, or what would be the most challenging thing for my main character to go through,
yeah,
or whatnot. So then I'll design events, characters, or whatever that go in line with that. So my characters will have these conflicts and so on and so forth. So it's more just kind of structured.
Yeah. My biggest suggestions would be, don't be afraid to let the story take control, take over, or the characters take over. I mean, if you feel that you can, if something's happening, I don't say out of your control, but basically, like, based on the way you have your characters working, if it varies from where you want it to be, don't be afraid to push it further. You know what I mean? Like, unless you have everything completely laid out and you know exactly where you want it all to be. I mean, like Conquest, it's an ongoing, and if we feel that, like, these characters are taking a turn that will improve the story or just make it just that more epic, we'll do that.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Conquest is an ongoing series.
Yeah.
Do you know what you're going to do? Do you have an ending in mind?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was almost the idea first and foremost.
Yeah.
Like, we had these characters based off of one story. And then my girlfriend, my ex now, but girlfriend at the time, we looked at it, and I'm telling her about the story, and she's like, "That sounds like Star Wars." I'm like, "Yeah, my brother's a big Star Wars fan." She's like, no, look at the story again." And I looked at it again, and I called them up. I'm like, "Dude, we just did Star Wars." You know what I mean? The villain is the guy's dad. That's totally Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's in outer space, and they're like, "What about this guy?" I'm like, "That guy is Chewie." You know what I mean? This you know, it's such, you know, such character tropes that it's ridiculous. And then as we developed it, we twisted around, flipped it on its head, you know, threw in a bunch of other mumbo jumbo. You know, and even now from issue to issue, it's like we're we're furthering the story, and we're letting the characters get to plot points, but we're also like leaving a lot of wiggle room for developing other story ideas. Like, we have one character who's looking to find his people, but rather than him come to Earth and or the planet they're on, not Earth, but be like, hello, my name is Noble, and I'm from a distant planet, and you know, one, we kind of hope the storytelling tells that, and then another part is just like, why would he know how to talk to these people? So the first whole issue, or first two issues he's in, or almost three, like 2 to 4, he says nothing until the last page of number 4 because he's learning the language. He has like internal dialogue, but like the people talk to him and it's like blah 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 dog blah 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 blah, you know. And then the first thing he says is basically a death threat to someone, you know what I mean? And that's like, that wasn't something planned, but it was like a cool moment. Like, characters get attacked and he starts beating the crap out of them. Like hardcore, like, the guy never did, he got his ass kicked in the first issue. Like, you know, he shows up and then next thing you know, he's somebody's prisoner with a bloodied face. And yeah. And then next thing you know, he's like kicking people in the face while gouging somebody else's eyes out and breaking necks and, you know, and then basically just throttles somebody, you know, 2 feet off the ground with the one arm. I know, I'm making an arm motion, like people can see me, but yeah. But, you know, and that just kind of came through the development of the story. While these other characters were doing their story around him, he had his own internal story. And then I would suggest, you know, and then we just started ideas like, what if he did this? What if he did that? You know, what if, you know, out of nowhere he just became this badass, which is kind of the end goal for the character. Like, each character has their own end goal and all focuses around the one main end goal. Yeah. But we still, you know, yeah, we had to get to certain plot points, but we're leaving a lot of room in between, you know, to develop where an arc can go.
Yeah.
You know?
So
that you know, that's just my suggestion. You know, don't be afraid of letting the characters take over. You know?
Totally. Like, the one thing I like is like character driven stories, and like with the like Airbender and Full Metal, like I mentioned earlier, and I forgot one, Blade of the Immortal. Like those series that hold high.
I love Blade of the Immortal.
Like, they're character-driven, and that's why I love them.
Well, I mean, I read the comic, not the...
I read the comic. I'm not too much into the animated version.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I've seen... It's kind of...
I know the comic can be slow sometimes.
Yeah.
But...
I still enjoy it.
Oh, me too. One of my local shops had, like, a 25-cent bin, and they had a ton of Blade of the Immortals.
What? You didn't call me?
I don't think I knew you at the time.
Okay. If you ever see that again.
Yeah. Well, I bought, like, 80 issues or something like that. Like, I have a stack like that of Blade of the Immortals at 25 cents a piece. But anyway. Yeah, and that's only, like, a third of, like, one volume.
Yeah. Are you keeping in touch with it?
No.
Like, I know it's
going to they were expensive back when those came out, like $3 or $4 in the 90s was a lot for a comic book.
Yeah.
And even now it's a little, it's closer to, I don't think he's not doing single issues anymore. I heard he's just doing the graphic novels. Yeah.
Which I collect, but yeah.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
But yeah.
But I think the main arc that I got with the last set was the one where he was kidnapped and they were cutting his arms off and sticking it to the other guy.
Yeah. So that whole plotline did go long.
Yeah. But it was good. Yeah.
So I hear, like, I believe you said it was gonna end soon.
That's what I heard.
Last time I checked, it was at volume 25 or 26 or something like that. So I definitely wanna.
Cool.
I need to.
Yeah.
Read those. So that gives you. Those are stories that are. Like, touch me and kind of move me and stuff that are, like, in my mind.
They're your equivalent for me, like, Dark Phoenix Saga and the Extinction Agenda.
For me.
Like, those are, like, you know, or even, I can't think of all the different story arcs that I like. But I think I find myself being tend to lean less away from superheroes and more into, like, realistic stuff. And maybe just in, like, style, too. Like, I really want to do, like a noir detective type of story.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we have kind of a sci-fi character set up like that, but, again, I mean, sci-fi, but I really want to play with, like, Heavy Shadow, and, like, I love, like Raymond Chandler's books, and, you know, stories about Elliot Ness, and, you know, the crime busters and all that, Depression era. There's a series of books called the True Detective series by Max Allen Collins. He did, Road to Perdition, that they based the movie off of. He did it as a graphic novel. And I love all his stuff. This is about a guy who, he writes this story about this one guy who his life spans from like the 20s to like the 80s or 90s. And he was involved in like a lot of major historical events. It's a fictional character in realistic events like Roswell. Like he was there during like a follow-up investigation. He figures out who kidnapped Lindbergh baby. He was part of the disappearance of Amelia Earhart. There's like one about the Chicago mob, like Al Capone, what happened to him. And his character is like a key character in all of these events. Like his character has an affair with Amelia Earhart and the Black Dahlia, you know. It's just really, and that's the type of stuff I love. Like, and his characters are so well written, like really sharp and really quick and very real, you know, for the time, for being like the 40s and 50s, you know. But that's kind of where my attentions lean towards, you know what I mean? Like, I want to do something like that, something more down to earth.
Yeah, I kind of agree with those sentiments a little bit. Like, I find myself falling out of the kind of supervillain mentality of, like, I'm gonna conquer the world type
yeah,
of thing.
The Doctor Doom.
Yeah. So more just a little bit about more kind of like grounded and something that can kind of, like you said, like a little bit realistic.
Yeah.
Even if it's a whimsical style, it's something a little bit more realistic and relatable to.
Yeah, even if, I mean, it's that old trope of, you know, ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah.
We have so many ideas that I want to develop. There's like so many other things on the plate. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
Yeah. So many days I can go home and really sit down and work on something until midnight or 1 a.m. You know, and actually get something produced. You know what I mean? Plus, you're trying to keep up with some type of ridiculous schedule with a convention that you may or may not even go to, or just even like I did 21 page layouts for the Chain Reaction Genesis book in like a day based off the script, and like I was just cranking them out, and they were about 6x4 inches, like pretty big for thumbnails. And as I was doing, I was like, you know, light pencil, then ink, and then like gray tones to separate, and then I take a picture and send it to the writer. And I just cranked them out. I don't think I had to make very many changes at all to the final pages, and it worked. And then I turn around and do layouts with my brother for a couple pages, and I'm just struggling over a redo on one page for 3, 4, 5 days, and it's just like, some things are just easier than others, you know? It's like rough. It's just like, I had such a good streak going, and then then a couple months pass by, and I'm working on one page, and it nearly destroys me. You know what I mean? Like, it's I don't know where I was going with that, but it's...
No.
Yeah. That's one of the downs. You know, and then, again, then you're up till 1 o'clock in the morning every day.
So, take your situation of having all those ideas and everything, and then just to relate of, like, my mindset a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, you have all these ideas within the comic platform. I have those, and plus all these other ideas that I want to do for paintings or hand letterings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, I definitely feel like I want to explore a lot of different things. And I think it's good, because I think that those elements will probably transition into my like comic stuff. So, for example, you might see some actual hand lettering or custom type within the actual lettering of the page and stuff like that. In high school I learned how to do comic lettering too. So
oh sweet.
So those elements will do carry over, so it'll be so it just that's all like I like when I the thing about it that I love is when I think about art, I feel like a little kid in a candy store, like, or in a toy shop that, you know, all these art toys are there.
Or near middle-aged art man, middle-aged man in Dick Blicks.
So.
That's cool. Yeah. I know. I when I have things going right, it's like almost unstoppable. Yeah. I mean, when I know I have like a layout done right, but I get the page layouts right, and I have the pencils there, and I have no distractions, you know, I'll just start working on pages and cranking them out and cranking them out, and then next thing you know, 4 a.m. hits.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it's bridged against the day off or something like that. But, you know, those are the days I love, even though I'm exhausted. Like, I may have to wake up early the next day. But it's, like, the feeling of, like, I got that much farther ahead. Like, I did layouts for one of my newest books, the pages, actual pages. Like, I did the first page, and it's, like, a character on one side of the page. He's got this big flowing cape, and it kind of helps cover some of the rest of the page. But then there's supposed to be, like, these galaxies and planets and suns going supernova all around it. And I thought, man, it's going to be so hard, you know, and I pull up the reference material. And the next thing I know, within like 5 or 6 hours, I got the page done, and it's a double page, so it's two huge pages. Like, well, that's great. You know, true, I got a big character on one side and part of a cave covering the bottom, but it's like, oh, that's a snap. I flip to the next page, which is also a double page, and just based on how well the other one went, it's like, oh, these are just characters in the middle of an action scene, right? It took like 3 days, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, well, there's action, and then there's foreground action, and then there's background action, and background characters, and background elements, and it's like, you have explosions and spaceships, and, you know, spit flying, and characters, it's like, you gotta worry about perspective and proportion, and, you know, and then you spend 3 5-hour days after work, every day, working on it to get it done, and then you go on to the next double page, and you get it done in like 4 hours, and then the next one is done in, you know, it's a simpler shot, but you have to change it for whatever reason, and then it gets in and takes another 2 days to finish it up. So, you know, but I mean, I'd almost rather do that all the time than almost anything else. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like everything else, unfortunately, we all got to pay bills and eat.
Yeah.
So if I didn't have to eat or sleep, you know, I would, I'd be unstoppable.
Yeah.
But so this is all stuff that you're doing. Yeah.
Well,
is there any type of time frame for it, or is it just one of those that happen when it happens, or...
For the graphic novel?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen after this time period of... So I have a show next month, first Friday next, come out if you can for all the local lights. And then...
First Friday in August.
First Friday in August at the Arts Factory.
Charleston and Main Street.
Yeah, so then in March 2015, I kind of roped in some co-workers of mine in my department, and the three, we have a trifecta of artists that are doing a show in March. We last week we met together.
Is that it, first Friday as well?
That's going to be a first Friday as well.
Okay.
So we met and we got together this past week, so we finally boiled our theme down, so we have a theme, so we're doing all this prep work for it.
Can you give an idea what the theme is?
Our theme is like faces.
Faces?
So
when do you need my piece? Oh, wait, you didn't call me! Oh,
so,
man!
Unfortunately, it's a three-person show this time, but another show.
I'm not
another
wide
time.
Enough in name.
No.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I have anything, I can plan that far ahead, but...
Yeah. But, yeah, one of these days, I definitely want to... rope in other people and stuff like that. So the three of us had that show. Then later in 2015, we're gonna go at it again, and we're gonna do some work for another gallery. So, like, 2015 is gonna be a very fun year for me. But in the meantime, I wanna build the branding of my name and associated to quality work, so I want to do like art pieces, hand lettering and stuff like that, and my web designs and stuff like that. So
so after 15, or you'll probably be developing the whole time, right? I mean, you'll be doing it here and there, working on this graphic novel.
Oh yeah, so the funny thing is, I think you probably can relate, is even when I'm working on like paintings or hand letterings, especially when I was doing some hand letterings and stuff like that, I was like, damn, I was thinking about the story, like the story of these characters, right? So it's like one of those things where I think you can relate that you're always you're always thinking about it and whatnot. So, and that's a good and bad thing, because you're kind of thinking, man, I want to redo this part.
Yeah, I've been able to kind of switch it off as of late.
Yeah.
Because before, like, I would let it consume me so much. Especially when, like, say, I've got, like, page layout. Like, at one point, I had like all those page layouts for Chain Reaction done in a day. Mm. And then I'm just like, oh, I'm just going to, now I can just do the pages, you know, I mean, just start working on them, cranking them out. You know, you take a couple days off here and there, but it's like the quickest I've ever developed a book, like 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
From like rough layouts to finished pencils and finished ink. I think, gosh, what was it? From November to end of January, so like less than 3 months, we had that whole book penciled and inked, you know, or yeah, laid out, penciled, inked. And it's only been within the last few months that it slowed down because we wanted to get it in color, and our colors, you know, his computer crashed on him, and he's just now got back up to speed. But but yeah, I mean, I'd love to be able to do that all the time.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's just, but when it's like, when like I say, like I had that for Conquest, and my brother doesn't have the script finished, and I don't have any more layouts, and I'm like, I've gotten 4 pages done in a weekend. It's like, I want more pages. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, but he went on a trip to Virginia. It's just like, no, I, you know, I, why aren't you here? Why can't I get more pages? It's so close. I could just start doing all this other stuff, and then it just stressed me out. I was like, you know, and I'd tell my ex, I can't believe he doesn't have any pages for me. I want to get the book done. I want to keep rolling. And now it's just like, it's not there. And I'll hit him up with a couple of messages and be like, you know, hey, we got to get this done. But if he's not, it's like, well, I'll work on other things, you know?
Yeah.
Like, learning to use Japanese brush pens. I've been wanting to do that, you know?
I'm so glad because I just got some new markers for my hand lettering, so.
Yeah, if you tried, where do you get your pens? I go to jetpens.com. You can get a lot of cool stuff there.
Yeah, so I recently heard about that because I watched this other artist, and they, like, one of them, this artist named Will Terrell, kind of, he has a Japanese
Kuretake?
Yeah, so I definitely want to get into this, but for these, since I needed like them quickly, I just got them off of Amazon.
Yeah.
So.
Well, JetPens is pretty quick.
But
like
yeah.
A week? Like, you can get it within a week?
But, like, what I mean is, I already had an Amazon account.
Oh, I see.
And
what you mean. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, you know, so that whole process was quick instead of, like, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's, you don't have to, yeah. Well, I recommend, they have almost everything you can think of on there.
Yeah.
Copics to.
How, what's the price on that Copics?
Copics, I think they're about regular with the store prices.
Okay.
But, I know we don't buy them from there. I get them from Blix. Blix is just, I don't know. I just like going down to the art store.
Yeah.
So I'm down there. I'll be buying Bristol boards and you know, other art tools. I don't know if I know I'll be using like, oh, an erasing template. I don't even know what that's for, but I'll buy one. You know. Biggest benefit I got was one of the drafting brushes. Since I got a drafting table, and I've stopped being afraid to erase. Just like.
Yeah.
Great, and then you just get the brush and just you're done. But
that kind of reminds me of when I was using erasers, like a Staedtler eraser. In college I got this eraser cover, so my hands wouldn't get dirty, right? And so I thought it was a cool idea, but then when my friends saw me, it was kind of funny. My friends saw me, they started teasing me for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of making fun of my eraser cover, saying, like, what is that, an eraser condom? Like, what?
So. Practice safe art, kid.
Yeah, practice safe.
We'll see who's laughing when you smudge your page. That's one of the biggest questions I get. Like I learned a long time ago about, like, doing a page. Like, you do a character, say there's a lot of shadow, and instead of filling it all in with graphite or lead, just putting an X.
Yeah.
So I know when I go to ink it, I just fill it in with black. That's one of the biggest questions I get when people look at pages or unfinished pinups. Like, what's the X for? Like, that's so when I'm drawing it over here and I have to go back up, I don't smudge all that graphite across the page and I have to go back in and erase between the lines.
Another funny story right there.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, I didn't witness this. It was my friend's kind of story. But there's this artist that was inking somebody's work, right? And the penciler just drew X's everywhere, which is standard for, you know, blocking this with ink, right?
Yeah.
But this guy, this inker, when he inked that, guess what he did?
Mm-hmm.
He inked all the little X's on stage.
He's not a real inker. He's not a real inker.
So.
Unless he thought somebody was going to go in, because I know sometimes inkers will do that digitally. They'll just ink in where the X is and then fill it in later. But yeah, that sounds ridiculous.
So.
I did that one time on a page. I was doing something, and like I'm gonna do some type of like black with like white outlining.
Yeah.
And then I think I drew around the outlining of the shape, and then for whatever reason, instead of clicking within the X, I clicked without it, and it did like a kind of reverse negative, and I just kind of kept going, and then that one whole corner section of the page looked completely opposite, and I'd gone too far to go back, so I had to erase the whole corner and go back in and fix it. I was like, damn it. But, yeah. That's it, you had to be there. So, Arts Factory, first weekend in August. What day is that?
Let's check real
quick. Check our phones. Upload it.
Let's see who can find it first. Get to it first.
August 1st.
Oh, I thought you meant which day.
Yeah, August 1st.
Oh, yeah.
A Friday.
August 1st.
Yeah. August 1st. August 1st, 2014. Yeah. Arts Factory, Vegas.
Yeah.
Charleston and Main Street.
Yeah. Starts at 6 people.
6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Till when? What? How late? Do you know?
It should run till 10.
10?
So.
I will certainly try to make it down there. My friend, he has, his band has shows down there. At Hell Pup, the comic shop next door.
Oh, okay.
They're called the Time Crashers.
Okay.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. They're time travelers.
Yeah.
The lead singer is Nikola Tesla, and then Leonardo da Vinci plays the lead guitar.
Yeah.
And he wears like a leather cap with like sci-fi goggles on it. And Julius Caesar plays bass. He's got like the crown of leaves, of gold leaves or whatever, and sandals, and he has like a velvet guitar strap, and he goes running around all crazy at people, and Francisco Pizarro plays guitar as well, and then Carl Sagan is the drummer.
Yeah.
And they sing about like Planet of the Apes and...
Speaking of Carl Sagan, have you, do you know his show Back in the Day, Cosmos?
Oh, the new one? Yeah.
Yeah, have you seen it?
Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Yeah,
he's my spirit animal.
Yeah, he's my favorite...
badass.
He's my favorite astrophysicist.
Yeah.
Not favorite. Many people...
Badass astrophysicist. Yeah, I love that show, too.
Yeah.
I haven't got... I think I caught, like, the first 4 or 5 episodes, but I felt... It was at the beginning of the year, they started premiering or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was in the middle of doing that book. It was just so... Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that band they sing about, Planet of the Apes... they have a love song about Back to the Future called 88 Miles Per Hour.
Yeah.
It's basically about Marty and his mom. It's like, I know my name's not Calvin Klein, but I just want to make you mine.
Yeah.
You know. And then they have one about, it's called Fuck the Time Cops, Pizza Berserker, which they just released yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And it's crazy because like, I got home and the whole band and all the band members were reposting the Bandcamp link, and I was like, holy crap, and I took a picture because like I bought a pizza that same day. I'm like, I don't know if it's not on purpose, but it makes the pizza so much better.
Yeah.
Could talk about how they went back in time and gave Vikings the fixings for pizza, and it ruined their society because there hadn't been a Shakey's in that, there won't be a Shakey's in that area for 1100 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's cool because like the song was released in 2023, and then their other song was released in 1978, and the other one was released in 3146 or something like that. Yeah, so it's pretty cool. Like Tesla's got like this arm piece that's like the time travel machine, and yeah, they tend to do a lot of free shows. It's pretty awesome. I'll forward you the link. It's pretty cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but yeah, so. I know. I know they do a lot of shows down there, but yeah, go down there, check out. We're at like 2 hours now, so we'll wrap it up.
Yeah,
man, we gotta get you started on that comic book sooner rather than later. You gotta stop messing around and just get it done. So, and I'll work you into my schedule if I have to. To be like, look, I'll help you do layouts or something. Yeah. I just want to see you get into the. Into the field, as it were, you know, because like we're all going to Stanley's Kamikaze in October, a bunch of us, you know, and we never would have done that if we didn't have the group and a bunch of guys to get together.
Yeah,
and we'll all be selling our own books and stuff down there. Yeah. So, Gerald, it's been good, man.
Yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, let's stop sweating our asses off. I think the sun went down and it got hotter.
Only in Vegas.
Yeah, I can't wait for it to be 99 degrees at midnight. All right. And remember, everybody, these things should be bagged and boarded, you heartless bastards.
For more information regarding Immortal Samurai comics and the podcast, please visit immortalsamurai.com for all the updates on Conquest, Chain Reaction, as well as art, convention schedules, and commission lists. That's www.immortalsamurai.com. The intro and outro music for the Set in Stone podcast is provided by The Devils You Know. You can find them on their Facebook page at The Devils You Know and at reverbnation.com/The Devils You Know. Check them out. They're an awesome band. I highly recommend them.